Hey, fantastic. Good deal. Hey, if you got a Bible, it's good to see you today. If you got a Bible today, turn to Daniel chapter 3. Okay, Daniel chapter 3. And, we were looking at this series. It was really take a look at a series like this. My bet is you've never been a part of a series on work. But, you know, every once in a while, you know, I like to share on a series, you know, that has to do with who God is, you know, theology kind of thing. Okay, who God is, how can we know Him better? But also, every once in a while, we'd like to do a series that's just purely practical. And that's what this is. This series is just purely practical. You're taking a look at the Scriptures and not just learning about who God is, but you're learning about who He's called you to be and practically how that gets into your life. And so then choosing a series like this one, it has an incredible self-evaluation to it, because you're looking at yourself, because this area of work, you're going to be doing it for a good bit of your life, right? You're going to be, the majority of your time usually is spent working. Now, when I say working, that goes across the board. Okay, those of you that have a 40-hour week job, and then some of you laugh, 40. I wish it was 40. All right, 50, 60, 70, okay? And so, but those of you that are students, it's the same concept. Therefore, your work, the work that you do, is a reflection on who you are, okay? And if you're a stay-at-home parent, I mean, again, all of it, you have to translate what I'm talking about to you to your situation, because I can go across every chair and everybody's got a different situation. So when I'm giving you just thoughts and principles, you've got to take them and apply them to you. I'm going to try to give you a few illustrations today, but it's so widely varied, this thing called work. Most of it, you're going to have to take it and you're going to have to put it, because this can be a very powerful series because it affects everybody in the room. And there's this picture of being a believer and what that looks like. Okay, now, last week we started on just a simple concept of who do you work for. Now, remember that every week we'll build on each other. And so let me give you, because everything we're talking about is dependent on what we talked about last week, right? If you're working for Christ, if you're working for God, the Lord, then the way you work, how you work, what you do, all the things that go with it change if you get the concept of who you're working for. Now, last week, if you weren't here last week, you're saying, am I going to be lost? Nope. Let me just share with you with one verse and it'll put you on the right page. All right, Colossians chapter 3. Take a look at it. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 23. It says this, all right? Whatever you do, now notice this, what you do is irrelevant. Okay? Therefore, you don't have to have some ultra-important job, at least what our world thinks is this ultra-important job, to feel like you have to give your best. Okay? I want you to know that God, we talked about this last week. This is all review. We talk about God is not impressed with your pay. He's not impressed with your position. So none of that matters. So that's what it says there. Whatever you do, it doesn't matter, okay? If you dig a ditch, if you drive a bus, okay? Or if you or if you do perform open-heart surgery, which we have all of those in our church. Remember this. What you do is irrelevant. Why? Because God gave you everything that you needed to do what you're doing. Therefore, if you do perform open heart surgery, then remember this: God gave you the opportunities, God gave you the mind, and God gave you the things to be able to do it. Therefore, it doesn't matter what you do, because it all comes from Him. That's why the Scripture says here, whatever you do. We talked about this last week. Okay, it says work heartily. A real good translation of heartily is that's not translated near as well. Really, work at it with all of your heart. Put everything you have into it is the thought. Therefore, whatever you do, okay, work. That is, give it your best. Okay, we're going to be talking a little bit more about that in times and weeks to come. Why? Now, here's the key to it all. Motivation. Where do you get your your motivation to do what you do? What drives you? And that was the incredible thought we had talked about last week when I gave you that quote from a guy that unless you bring your motivation with you through some form of serving the Lord or God or spirituality is what this person said, okay, is that you're going to find it hard to maintain your motivation. So as you put this here, you put this all together. Therefore, what you do is not important. It's how you do it. Work at it with all your heart. That is, give it your best. Okay? Why? As for the Lord and not for men. In other words, you're not motivated to do this work because of people around you. You've done it because, obviously, of who the Lord is in your life. Okay? Take a look at the next verse. Knowing that from the Lord, you're going to receive the reward, right? The inheritance as your reward. And here we go. You are serving the Lord Christ. So that's where we came up with last week. Who do you work for? Who do you work for? As a believer in Jesus Christ, if you are a believer in Christ today, then I want you to remember that you work for Him. Whatever it is you do. When you wash a dish, okay, whenever you do, whatever you do, the Scripture says, do it the best you can do it. Because you're responsible and you're accountable to Him for it. It's an amazing thought of where your motivation comes from. Okay? Because ideas and things that happen in the workplace, I tell you what, this has really touched a nerve. I've gotten more stories, and then after what I shared last night with the country church crowd, I got a real onslaught of story after story after story after question after question after question. Because here's the key, right? Your life as a believer, okay, it's important to you, okay? The greater majority of you would not be sitting here, okay? You're here because your life as a believer is important to you. Unless some of you that are visitors, some of you that are seekers, that are looking and saying, hey, I don't know what this whole Jesus thing is. Okay, there's some of you also. But I want you to understand, the great question I know that you have is, how do I translate what the Scripture, what it says on the page into my life? In other words, okay, I know this is what this says, but how does this fit here? And I'm here to tell you, if you can get this piece translated into your life, you'll be amazed at how God can use you. Because I doubt that, other than if you're a parent, I doubt that there will be no other place in your entire life where you have potential to have as much impact as you do at the workplace. Because people at the workplace know you the best. But that becomes the great translation. As a believer, how do I get, I know this is this, but how do I get this to fit here? And that comes down to what some people, in error, I believe, have done, is that they've tried to separate their work life from their spiritual life. Right? They're trying to say, okay, and I understand why you do that, because the workplace can be so difficult. It can be godless. You say, how in the world can I be? But I'm here to tell you, if God has you where you have it, and you work in a godless place, I don't want you to look at that so much as a negative, although it can be negative. I want you to look at that as that God's put you on a mission field, and the darker the place, the more opportunity light has to shine. Okay? That's how I want you to see it. Because as you found last week, and it was very important, and I shared last week, and you're going to hear me say this most every week, is that if you are a believer today, you have to hear my heart, and you have to hear this is the truth. You are in the ministry. Okay? Don't look at me and say, well, Pastor, no, you're in the ministry, you know? No, you are. If you're a believer, you're in the ministry. Therefore, God has you planted where you are. You may not like where you are. Okay? That's immaterial. It's not required to like where you are. All that's required is to give your best. As long as God has you planted there. I've looked through the Scriptures, and I saw a lot of different people that God used. They didn't necessarily like where they were. In fact, most of them didn't at the beginning. So again, liking where you are, again, we got to get over ourselves, right? We got to get over ourselves that, oh, you know, Lord, I just know you want me in some place that I just love being there. Okay, great. Sometimes that's okay. All right, if you find that place, that's good. Go for it. But I have found that so many things God has for us, and how he wants to use this come in all different shapes and sizes. Now, so as you put those things together, you are in the ministry. That's why, as I told you last week, and I try not to use like titles with a lot of us as pastors and staff. Now, pastor is a good title because it comes from the scriptures. It just means shepherd or leader. That's fine. I can go with that. But remember all these other titles that try to put me or us as a staff in a different sphere. I try to avoid, like reverend and all those things, because we're not. To be honest with you, you have much more opportunity that make a difference for Christ than I do. Because I just don't, unless you introduce them to me, I don't meet very many people outside of the church world. Because it's where I spend a majority of my time, right? And so you have incredible opportunities. We talked about that last week. Now, we come to today. I had no idea that what I'm going to share with you today is going to make you think as much as it's going to make you think. I mean, you know, when I put these messages together, I have no idea how they're going to come across, right? And I have a little bit of an idea, but a lot of times I'm not even right. But as I shared last night, I didn't realize the response I would get from people about touching on this. All right? And it's this whole, the title, okay? The title this morning is Work Ethics. Okay? Work Ethics. Therefore, ethics within work. I want you to think about, I mean, I remember I was, you know, as I've told you before, I didn't become a believer until I was 21. So I have a business degree from college. I didn't go to Bible college. I went to a secular college. And I have an administrative management degree, okay, which is basically a little bit of everything. And I remember sitting in a business ethics class, okay? And I was, I would either just become a believer or I wasn't yet a believer, but close. But I remember sitting in that class and thinking to myself, this is a joke, right? Because everybody, I mean, the ethics that they came up with, and then one person would always ask the question, you know, I disagree, I think. And basically, ethics are based upon opinions, and therefore ethics change, you know, with whatever time, whatever. And so basically, that class was a total bust, all right? To be honest, a total waste of time. But I want you to hear this. As a believer, there are certain concrete ethics that go with being a believer, right? What the scripture says. And they're not really up for debate. And so as you take a look at this, it's not just how we work, but in the way that we work, right? There's a way of doing things. And there's a way of working that is right in God's eyes. Okay? And those are the things I want to talk about. Now, my desire this morning is not to condemn anybody. My desire this morning is to get us as believers to think about who He's called us to be and how He's called us to operate. Because, see, I have learned that the world in which we live as a workplace, a workforce, can be a really difficult place to maintain integrity, to maintain honesty, to maintain the way that God has called you to do it, right? And I have found that people are stretched and people are pushed and shoved into different areas, of different ways that really God's called us not to be. That's been happening for a long time. But that's why a lot of people, see, we have to be able to live with ourselves. Let me tell you what I mean by we have to be able to live with ourselves. You see, as a believer, even those who aren't believers, there's a conscience that lives inside. Very few people can go on with no problems knowing they're doing something they're not supposed to be doing. That's where the excuses come in, the rationalizations. Okay, people who steal from their employer. Oh, well, they're so rich, they don't need it. You hear what they're saying, why they're saying it? They've got to be able to live with themselves because they know stealing is wrong. And so they've got to talk about how things are unfair, that they're so rich that obviously they're never going to miss it, and I need it. You see the ethical tension that hits? We have to be able to live with ourselves. As believers, or even unbelievers, that when you live in a certain way, you know. I mean, I've been around couples that where people are committing adultery, they're going out with other people, and they have to be able to justify themselves or they can't live with themselves. They can't sleep. It plagues who they are. So you have to come up with some rationalization to say, this is okay. Well, you know, if my wife or my husband had treated me right, then I would. And they come up with a whole myriad of excuses. Why? Because you have to be able to live with yourself. It takes a cold, hard-hearted person to live this way and it not bother them. It takes someone who has so kicked their conscience to death that nothing bothers them, right? That's why we blame everybody else. Well, if he hadn't or if she hadn't, if... Why? See, I've learned this. And so we talk about ethics. My desire here is to not be condemning. My desire here is to get truth into your mind so you can think about this. What does this look like? Who has God called me to be? Also, remember this. God has not called you to be the inspector of other people. So if you're sitting there thinking, boy, tell them, Jeff, they're sitting here, they need to hear it. You're missing out on my whole point for sharing with you. All right? But it is a tough subject. Okay? And I didn't realize it till last night. All right? A lot of those folks were retired. All right? And it's still, they still had lots of stuff. So as we move through this, again, I want you to think in your own heart. Okay? Let's look at it. Again, nobody's perfect in this issue. Nobody's going to be perfect. Okay? But it becomes, as a believer, a direction in which we go. Okay? So, when you're asked, what happens when you're asked to do something that you know is not right? Okay? And again, what happens when we try to separate? This is how we live with ourselves. When we try to separate the way we do business with how we are as a believer. That's why believers can get themselves into trouble because the workplace can be such a tough place. I mean, guys, I know that some of the people that you work for said, Jeff, if you it's real easy, Jeff, for you to stand up there and be spouting all these wonderful principles, but you don't have to look in his face every morning I walk through the door. I understand. That's why Daniel 3 is such a great illustration. We'll talk about it in just a minute. Okay? But I do know who God's called us to be. I do know who we work for. And I do know what He's called us to be and to do. And I do know He's promised to never leave or forsake us. Okay? Let me give you a few of these thoughts. This is interesting. USA Today did a poll lots of years ago. Okay? And I want you to know that there was more of an anonymous poll that they took so they could get some more truthful answers. I want you to hear some of them, just a handful of them. 58% of all people that were polled said that they consistently cheat on their expense reports. 60%. And you say, Jeff, that company is so, it doesn't need, you know, everybody does. I understand that. But as a believer, we ask ourselves the question, is that right? Right? Interesting. Continue. 50% said that they use company time, okay, to be part of a second job. Think about that. You're employed by this person, and you're taking time while you're employed with them to do another business on the side. Right? Interesting. And some of you are going, well, yeah, Jeff, that's no big deal. That happens all the time. I understand that. But as we look at these, I just want to give you some examples. Okay? Bunch of these others. 20% said they've given kickbacks to customers. 20, one out of every five. And we could go on and on and on when we think about, okay? I remember one time, and this, we'll talk a little bit more about this next week. I was working with a guy one time. And he was bragging about that he was a master at taking a 30-minute job and making it last all day. I mean, he was actually bragging on that, right? And I thought to myself as I looked at him, as he moved like molasses, okay, and just meandered and wandered around, I thought to myself, because immediately I was just a kid at the time. I immediately looked at him and thought, this is what I thought. As a lost 19-year-old, I looked at him and said, what a waste. What a waste. 19, right? And yet when you take a look at this ethical question, all right, I want us to take a look now at a scripture. Take a look at Daniel chapter 3 and verse 1. Okay? Daniel chapter 3 and verse 1. Now, I want to give you, there's a tension that comes with this, talking about this, okay? And I had some dread in sharing this because I knew I was going to be stepping on toes. I was going to be stepping on things. But I so want us to know who he is. And I so want us to be a part of who he's called us to be. And this is a big part of it. Because more than half your life is spent doing this. Therefore, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. This doesn't mean just your family, getting your family life right. Or just doesn't mean getting this. This piece is huge. But it doesn't necessarily mean everything's going to go perfect. Now, let me give you this illustration here that comes out of the Bible, Daniel chapter 3. Now, this is the story. If you've been in church at all in your life, this is a story you heard early on. Okay? In fact, I remember before I could read, the little Sunday school teachers would tell you this story of what they would say, these three Jewish boys. That were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I mean, there were songs sung about them, little children's songs, all kinds of things. But these kids were known for something. I have to be careful to call them kids because at the time, they were probably in their mid-20s to early 30s. Now, if you grew up in church, and you remember the little pictures on the wall? These were boys, like teenage boys, like 12, 14. That's not the case, okay? Because you're going to see what type of positions they had. Oh, there's a little glittery thing falling right there. See it? All right, it's going to fall right there on Tim's head. Oh, right behind Tim. Very good catch, man. All right. They warned me. They're a big concert in here. They had glitter going where they say, Jeff, it's probably going to start floating now. So if you see it, ignore it. Except for me, I have ADD, so I can't ignore anything. All right, let's get back to where we were. All right. So let me get, that was a real good snatch, man. I was impressed with the guy right behind you there, Tim. All right. So as we think then, these three boys, three Jewish boys, let me give you the context, because the context is going to be huge for you this morning. Context of this story of Nebuchadnezzar. You have to remember the beginning of the world powers, okay? That time from around 500, all right, B.C., 550 B.C., all the way to the end of the Roman Empire. There were world powers that ruled, okay? First world power was the Babylonians with Nebuchadnezzar. They were the very first, okay? And then they were defeated by the Medes and the Persians, mainly the Persians. They were the dominant part of that, but we'll call them the Medes and the Persians, okay? That was Darius and some of those guys. And then you had the Greeks that conquered. That was Alexander and others. And after the Greeks, you had the Romans. So the ones that started it, really the one that started it all, was a guy by the name of Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. And that is the story, that is the context of Daniel, the book of Daniel. We're going to talk about this through the summer. Okay, Daniel is an amazing guy here, but who was he and where did he come from? Well, when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Israel, it happened in a lot of different times. But basically what happened was, as an overall look, Nebuchadnezzar came through and wiped out Israel. 586 is the time everybody gives. Wiped them out. Now Nebuchadnezzar was smart. He just wasn't a thug. He was smart in what he was trying to do. It doesn't mean he was right, but he was smart. And his desire was to create a one-world empire. Okay? And he knew that he was going to have to do several things in order to accomplish a one-world empire. Problems that still happen today, that conquered people have real bitterness. And if you treat them like conquered people, eventually they're going to rise up and cause you problems. So Nebuchadnezzar had an idea that every people that he would conquer, he'd go through and do a study of the people, and he'd find, especially the young, okay, late teenagers, early 20s, and he would find the strongest and the brightest and the most intelligent. And he'd scoop them up, and he'd take them off to Babylon. If you were good at a skill, a craft, then he scooped you up and took you to Babylon. And then he put you, okay? And then he put you in a school to teach you and train you. And then he used these conquered peoples and he used them as part of his ruling class, trying to mix the cultures, right? That's where these boys came from. They were Jewish kids. So obviously they were bright. Daniel was one of those. They were scooped up and taken into exile. And so Nebuchadnezzar then had that idea. The other idea, other problem that Nebuchadnezzar knew that he had, is that every people group that he conquered had their own belief system. They had their own gods and goddesses. And he knew that he was never going to create a one-world government and a one-world state unless he could create a one-world religion. In fact, in Daniel, you're going to see this summer, we're going to have a really cool time this summer, is that Nebuchadnezzar is a picture of the Antichrist trying to create a one-world religion, which is what he's going to try to do in what he's doing. So this is an interesting one. The parallels with Daniel are really pretty cool. Okay? But he wanted to create, this obelisk or this monument, or this not monument so much as this false god that Nebuchadnezzar set up is not just because Nebuchadnezzar's an egomaniac. He's trying to create a one-world religion so he can get everybody on the same page. Because he's tired of the fights and the battles and the wars over religious systems. So he says, we're just going to have one big one. And he's commanded everybody to worship it. So now that you know these things, okay, it helps reading the story. It opens up reading the story. Okay, so let's begin to read now that you kind of see that. Take a look at chapter 1. Okay, chapter 3, verse 1. It says this. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth was 6 cubits. And he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. What that basically means, it was kind of like an obelisk. It was 90 feet tall. Imagine that, but only 9 feet wide. So people, you know, some of the people in their imagination, artists' imagination, they draw this monument of, you know, some person, but that's an awful skinny one, right? Most just kind of like just an obelisk of some sort. Whatever it was overlaid with gold. And basically Nebuchadnezzar, I believe he brought everybody into town and he trained them all in this new religion and says, you can call it whatever you want to call it. This is what I'm thinking, he said. He's just trying to promote getting everybody on the same page. And he makes it mandatory. And here comes the real rub. Okay? Here comes the real rub with the Jewish man, okay, at the time. Let's take a look. Continue to read. And he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, justices, magistrates, and all officials of the province to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. All right, take a look at the first part of that verse. Can you take it back for me? The first part of verse 2. Okay, he sent to gather, satraps, prefects, they're kind of an order of those who are officials, those who have authority, those who are in charge. And in a satrap, you can look them all up, prefects, governors, counselors. That is everybody who's anybody. That is anybody who is in charge. That is anybody who leads. Okay, continue to see what it talks about. Counselors, then it goes on to treasurers. So we're talking about the economy. Okay, and we're talking about justices. Those are basically judges, those who make decisions. In fact, those are basically, the word justice there means the judges of the judges. So these are big magistrates, that is, those that are on the local level. The reason it lists all these is because it's sharing with you that Nebuchadnezzar is a pretty intelligent guy, and he's got this system of administrative abilities. That's the reason this empire did so well, and it's the reason that it dropped so fast when he died. But he was a brilliant guy, Nebuchadnezzar, but he had an ego to go with it. But he was smart, and so he had them all come, right? He had all the officials, anybody from all of the conquered countries, they all came to Babylon for this dedication of this new God, this new world religion that everybody's going to participate in throughout the Babylonian Empire. So now that you see what he's doing, you can see just how much this means to Nebuchadnezzar and how much he sees this importance of it. All right, let's go on to read. Take a look at verse 3. Then all of those people, okay, and all the officials of the provinces gathered at the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image of Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and all other kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And whosoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be cast into the burning fiery furnace." Okay? So therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of all of those instruments, all the peoples, nations, languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So you have this picture, right? This is the prevailing pop culture. Right? This is the prevailing cool thing. This is the latest fad. This is the thing that you're commanded you're going to do. Right? And if you don't do this, you're going to be thrown into a fiery furnace. Right? And so I want you to see the parallel and the tension. This happens to you and is going to happen to you and happens to you more than you realize. Sometimes if we have given in so much, or if we finally made the decision, no, I'm not going to so much, it doesn't hit us as much. But this is the same tension that hits you. What happens when you are asked to do something from a superior that you know is wrong? Now, I'm not talking about making a crusade over everything. Okay, I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about things that are clearly wrong, like in this particular situation. Right? Or when a superior tells you that you have to lie. You know, those type things. Those things that he told me I had to get my hair cut. I'm just not, oh, get a haircut. You know, good gosh, are you kidding me? I'm not talking about silly things. I'm talking about things that matter. Right? I'm talking about lying. I'm talking about cheating. I'm talking about stealing. Those things. Okay? It's interesting. So, again, I tell you what, sometimes believers lose their ability to be light by dying on every hill they come to. Are you hearing me? Let me tell you what, there are some hills that aren't even close to worth dying on. But there are some hills I'm going to die on. Does that make sense? Therefore, we're going to be who God's called us to be. Not arrogant, not cocky, not judgmental of others, but just simply no. So anyway, here's what it is, right? Here's what it is. So what happens? Well, they play all this music, man. It probably was a party, okay? Probably a big Christmas party, right? and had everything there, you know, everybody's doing whatever, all kinds of stuff going on. But they said, hey, when this happens, we want everybody, we're all going to be in unity here. We're all one people now, right? And everybody's going to bow down. This is going to be such a cool event. So all the music goes off and everybody bows down. Okay? Everybody bows down. Let's continue to read. And these people are always with us, okay? I just always like to say that. Look, their names are the Chaldeans. Look at verse 8. It was just a people group that had been conquered also. All right? Therefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of all those instruments shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship will be cast in the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Okay, these men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Now, those people are always going to be with us. I've learned not to listen to them. You know, there's those and let me tell you, this may help you too. Don't constantly be looking. I found the people who constantly look for hypocrisy in others are usually the biggest hypocrites themselves, if anybody knows what I'm talking about. And that's these Chaldeans, you know. They're the ones that are always looking around to find out who's doing wrong so that they can stand up and say, well, you know, king, you know. That's not who God's called any of us to be, okay, as you'll see in this particular case. But they maliciously came against them. Also note here that Nebuchadnezzar had appointed these three men, let's call them what they are, over different affairs in Babylon. And so they, when this decree went out, I'm guaranteeing you, they kept an eye on them to see what they were going to do when the music went off, right? Continue to read. And so how did he respond? Okay. Let's see in chapter 3 now, and take a look. Therefore, look down there at verse 12. There are certain Jews you've appointed to be over the affairs of the province of Babylon. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They not serve the gods or the golden image that you've set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious, rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image I've set up? Now, if you're ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every other kind of music, if you'll fall down and worship that I've made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you'll be immediately cast in the burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? You hear the arrogance? And what God's going to be able to help you now? Right? Basically, saw himself as God, I think. As sometimes bosses do when they get on an ego trip. Yes, that happens. Absolutely, that happens. If you're a boss here today, we're going to talk to you next week. Next week's message is a word to the boss. 2 weeks from today is a word to the employee. All right. So if you have a boss, you may want to have him here next week. All right. Again, I just want these things to be practical. I want you to understand what the scripture says about this. But anyway, so these kids, I mean, I got to stop calling them kids. I've just been so ingrained all my life there with kids. They're late 20s, early 30s, I believe. And so they're put in this situation, and basically Nebuchadnezzar says, okay, I'm going to give you guys another chance. But you do know what's going to happen to you if you don't do what I tell you to do. Okay? Now, here's their answer. This is classic, okay? This ought to be one of those you write on an index card and put somewhere, all right? All right, listen to what they said, all right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, you know, I think it's like, oh, bless your little pointed head, all right? I used to have a seminary professor that would say that in class when a student would ask a stupid question. You know, that always happened in seminary. Yes, doctor, will you tell me about, you know, and he go, oh, bless your little pointed head. That was the stupidest question I have ever heard in my life. Anyway, so I've used that. That's followed me around for the years. All right, but here we go. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar, We have no need to answer you in this matter. Okay? Basically, the thought here is we have no need to answer you. In other words, you don't have to play music again. In other words, we don't have to meet together, the three of us, to strategize how we're going to do this and what we're going to do. Decisions already made. No. No. I'm not going to do it. And I want you to understand that he is saying that to the most powerful man in the world. Okay? Continue reading. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? We have no need to answer you this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we're able to deliver, who is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. Look at verse 18. If you like writing in your Bible, circle the three words, but if not. Every believer ought to have a but if not clause, okay, in their lives. I believe God can do anything he wants to do. I believe God can deliver me from this disease, this cancer. I believe God can. But even if he chooses not to, I'm not going to stop trusting him. Right? Does that make sense? I tell you what, though, it's real easy for us to talk about it in here, and it's real hard for you in the morning to go walking into it. There's a big difference, guys, and I understand that. I just want you to hear this. There's this tension. There's that tension that happens when the one in charge tells you that you're going to have to do this. Let me tell you this. We've got a battle coming. We have, as a church, have a battle coming where we are going to be told what we're to believe and where we're going to be told how to believe it and how to practice it. It may not be just like this, but it's coming, right? And I'm just here to tell you, and I'll make a promise to you, that's a hill we'll die on, okay? That's a hill we'll die on. Why? Because we're not answerable to the government over certain things. Yes, we're to be underneath their authority. Yes, we're to pay our taxes. Yes, we're to obey the laws unless those laws go against God's laws. And then we look at them and say, hey, listen, we don't have to think about it. No. No. Well, we're going to throw you in the fire furnace. Well, then heat it up. Heat it up. Now, I don't mean that arrogant. I don't mean that cocky. I'm just saying to this. I want you to hear my heart. This is who we are. This is who God's called us to be. This is how we're going to live. But there's that tension. That's the one I want you to. There's that tension. The tension that comes from that. So, as you can take a look at it, and, I mean, we've run out of time. I've run out of time. And I've got so much more to tell you. But let me just tell you the rest of the story. Basically, what happened was, you know, Nebuchadnezzar just was furious, and so he heats this furnace up seven times as hot as it can be, and he throws these three guys in, and it's so hot that the ones who throw them in die themselves. But then they go in. Of course, God protects them in this particular case. Now, remember, God hasn't always promised to do that. If he has different ideas, different plans, that's what the but if not's for. But in this particular case, God was there. There was even a fourth one in the fire with him that we're going to talk about when we get to Daniel over the summer that we're not going to stay with today. So you want to stay tuned at the 1st of June, okay? We're going to hit this again. We're going to talk about this fourth guy in the flame. But the thought today is simply this, okay? How do we do business, work ethics? And you translate. I had people tell me more stories last night how that, you know, one guy was telling me that he was working, and he had some of his fellow employees tell him that he had to stop working so hard, and you know, he didn't do anything. He just kept working hard, and finally they spread lies about him and got him fired. Remember this. You wouldn't believe how many stories that I heard from people sharing me last night. But you make the decision of how you're going to live. And it includes how you live at work. I got just a microcosm. Again, this tension. I try not to use too many illustrations, but I'm going to use one from Martha, all right, from Martha's life. This was when she was a student, actually. And it was such a microcosm of a bigger thing that happens to all of us. And here we go. Martha and I got married, and we promised her parents that when we got married, she would finish college. And her dad was wise, because I would have promised anything so that we could get married. All right? But he was wise because she probably would have not have finished if we had made the promise. Because within 9 months, she's expecting. With 18 months, we have a baby, and she's still trying to go to school. Anyway, she's at this college in Savannah, Georgia, where I was a youth pastor. And she had to take a PE class, right? And she chose tennis. She went out and, you know, played tennis. So the first part of the class, they give you instructions. And then the last half of the class, you play a round robin. That is, you play individually every person in the class, and you play outside of class. Well, Martha found out pretty early on that she couldn't get anybody to play her. And then she found out why. Because everybody in the class were just making the scores up. All right, yeah, I don't think you're catching on. They would all get together, and they'd say, okay, we played a set, and you won 6-3. So I'll mark that down, I'll mark that down. And they even did it to where not everybody lost, you know? Okay, I'll let you win this time. And then they would turn these false... Okay, I said, well, Jeff, that's silly. I know, but it's a microcosm of the bigger picture that every one of you face. So what are you going to do? You can't get anybody to play you. What are you going to turn in? You got no way to avoid it. You're either going to lie, or you got to expose it. Think about it. It bothered her, by the way. She was only 20. It bothered her, but she had to go to the teacher and said, listen, I just want you to know I can't get anybody to play me. And so I can't just turn in these fake scores. And then Martha became a real popular person in the class. And I'm here to tell you, look at me. If you care about what others think of you more than you care about what God thinks of you, you'll turn in the false report. Does that make sense? That's the microcosm of the tension that happens when we as believers are called to live to a different standard. And don't expect people to stand up and applaud. Nebuchadnezzar didn't. Right? He didn't. And it had just been real easy. Right? It had just been real easy for them to come up with some excuse so they could live with themselves, to come up with some excuse to say, hey, this is what we'll do. And you get the three guys together. Okay, what we're going to do is that we'll all bow down on the outside, but we're not bowing down on the inside. Right? Or, hey, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll just go ahead and bow down now, and we'll just ask God for forgiveness later. And the myriad of excuses that we all use so that we can live with ourselves. Right? As I close today, again, this has been, you don't realize it's been a little bit tougher, but I want you to hear, it's who He's called us to be. Let me throw at you a couple things just to kind of think about. I didn't even get to these, right? But I kind of got to tell you these because you're going to find out that I had things to learn that I didn't give you. All right, number one. When you compromise at work, you'll be amazed how you lose moral authority at home. You know, it's an interesting thing. Your kids pick up quicker than anyone else. And when you start down a road, it makes it easier to go down that road. And your conscience doesn't scream at you near as loud the more you go that direction. It's an amazing thing. Okay? I had a friend of mine that really made some mess ups, and it took him a long time to get back the respect at home. I don't know that he ever totally got it back. It's amazing how a whole stack of chips usually goes with it eventually. All right? Number two. When you compromise, you wind up losing self-respect. You know, it always takes a toll on you Because it's not just once. You can forget about it if it's just once. But it's a compounding thing, and it takes a toll on a person that has a conscience. Now, if you have kicked your conscience so to death, and you've so convinced yourself it's everybody else's fault and everything else, then maybe. But for the average person, it just beats on you and wears on you, especially the believer. It just does. Because it's not who he's called us to be. And then number three. All right? When you compromise, you lose the potential of God working mightily in your life. You know, it's so easy to come up with spiritualese. You know the story here of these three boys, or three men. Because when they came out of the fire, Nebuchadnezzar wound up saying, "Wow, God, your God is really God." And a whole lot of things happened after that. But it had been really easy for these three men to say, "Hey, listen, let's go ahead and bow down, because if we don't, we'll lose our chance to share Christ with the king." Right? So there's this great picture here. Who he's called us to be, what he's called us to be. Now, I've got to be done. I went a little bit over, but there's some things around my heart I wanted to share with you. You know, this is who he's called us to be, sometimes in the face of great things. And these great decisions that all of us have, is that what voice are we going to listen to? Right? Whose do we want to be? Now listen to me. I know in a room this size, because I know the statistics, lots of failure in this room. Okay? Including the guy standing right here. Lots of failure through the years. But listen to me here. Don't allow failure to define you. You can't worry what's happened in the past. All you can worry about now is what you're going to do going forward. Does that make sense to you? That's the beautiful thing about being a believer, right? Right? So again, this is who he's called us to be. And this is part of saying, "Lord, wanna be yours." Okay? All right. So next week, okay, a word to the boss. Okay, a word to the boss. Let's all stand. We'll have a closing word of prayer. Tim, yeah, come on out and close us. And great to see you guys today. Great series. And I do. I look forward to hearing stories of I heard a whole bunch last night, but if you have some you'd like to send to me about different things God's shown you in the workplace, I would love to be able to use some of them, but also understand more about what all of you guys face when you head into work. All right, God bless you guys, and have a great day.